Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture with members of the But Why Though writing staff. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Swara.
Salam.
And Charles.
Hello.
And this week, we're going to be talking about the joy of missing out and just kind of like media consumption in general and as a thing. But first, I want to get into the news, and there's always a lot going on, so I'm going to focus in on two things. Both of these are video game things. I don't think I told you guys what we're talking about. But first up, Legend of Zelda, Echoes of Wisdom. Did you guys see this?
Yes, I am so stoked for this. Like, as someone, sorry to jump right into it, but
No, go for it.
I've only gotten into the Legend of Zelda series relatively recently through Breath of the Wild and through my fiance, who's been super into the franchise her whole life. And yeah, I'm pretty, I haven't obviously played like a lot of the games, but I read up on so much of the lore, and like, I love Zelda as a character. So obviously, you know, even though I love Link too, and like all of the game mechanics with him, I could also see the frustration of not being able to play as Zelda, but in this game we play as Zelda, and she has really cool powers. It's like she's able to basically copy any item in the world. There's obviously like some inspiration from Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, which I am still in the midst of playing, and along with like five other games. And it's just like, yeah, like Zelda, she's just such a great character. Now she gets to save the day, and it's cool. I'm really stoked.
Yeah, and this, I mean, this is an idea that people have, you know, been floating for a while of like, well, what if we could play as Zelda? And I guess technically, I think Wand of Gamelon, which is like a non-canon game made by Philips CDI, or for the Philips CDI, like that one you play as Zelda. But I think the cool thing here is that they didn't just make it a reskin. It's not like, oh, this is the same game, but you have a staff instead of a sword, but you're still solving puzzles, gathering weapons, whatever. It's like they built a new play style for this character, new mechanics, and they're letting Zelda be her own thing in a really thorough way. And I thought that was what interested me the most, because it would have been very easy to say, and in this game, Zelda's the one with the sword, and like, yeah, it would have been fine, but it wouldn't have felt as good. It wouldn't have been as special.
Like,
I think
not Zelda. She's a magic user. She's the mage of like between her and Link, and it feels organic to her character in a really great way.
Agreed. Charles, did you get a chance to watch that trailer?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm very excited about it. I am someone who, well, I've never been the biggest Legend of Zelda fan. Personally, the closest I come to Legend of Zelda is the top down. I was thrilled a few years back when I got to review the Link's Awakening remake same sort of visual style. So I'm really happy that they're going back to the top down. I don't know if Nintendo's commented officially, but I saw some people like took that final shot where like Zelda's on the bluff overlooking Hyrule, and they like circled some of the buildings, and they were like, hey, these correspond to the Link to the Past buildings and how they were set up and stuff.
That's so it may be
another one, kind of like a Link Between Worlds, that's at least on a version of that map in that sort of, it may be that Hyrule.
Okay, that's cool. I'm into that. And I honestly, I've been replaying A Link Between Worlds like just this last week. And I would love to see them go back to that one. Cause I mean, it's the Link to the Past, Link Between Worlds maps, like they're good. Like they work, they're big enough to explore, but small enough that it's not like overwhelming. And I think that's what you need in a top down. I think like sprawling top down doesn't feel as good. It doesn't feel right. So I would love if that's kind of what they're going back to. I would also be fine if they're just like brand new map, because we needed to create environments that her skill set had good solutions to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it won't be like a one for one or anything, but
I don't know. Cool. I mean, playing A Link Between Worlds, it's more one to one than I realized, I think, a little bit. Like, it's pretty spot. I mean, not like perfect, but it's like, yeah, you just sort of took that map again, but it's still fun. And like, I don't have a problem with that.
And again, as I said, that looks like theory. I haven't seen anything that says Nintendo's confirmed that. And like, I think the skill set is cool. I like the concept of being able to like trying to pull the Breath of the Wild approach of like allowing players to come up with their own solutions to things is interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would like it if Zelda could maybe smack a few people around.
Yeah,
you know, like if
there
we could
should be
get like a little Sheik a mode melee. Maybe or something. But
oh yeah,
oh that would be interesting. Yeah, I saw somebody comment saying something like, oh, so this is like Scribblenauts meets Pokemon. And I'm like, kind of, but I'm into it. Like, that's a, like, because you also, you don't just copy objects, you copy, like, enemies, and you can drop them on the map. But yeah, I'm excited for it. That's kind of all I have to say, but I just thought it was cool that Nintendo finally did a Zelda as Zelda game, but also it's not a reskin, and that, I think, is... I shouldn't be surprised by it, but I just, it was just like a very like happy thing.
I mean, it certainly was. I mean, to me, it was a surprise because it's been so long. Like, it feels like the last several Zeldas, every time you're like, oh, we're going to get another Zelda. Is this going to be the one where we get to play as Zelda? Is this... And Nintendo never says anything about anything, and Nintendo does what it wants. So, like, if it's convinced that, oh, people don't really, or at least enough people don't want a Zelda, we're not making it, they're just not going to make it. You know, they just do what they're going to do. So, it was definitely a pleasant surprise, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the second thing I wanted to talk about is, so, the Elden Ring DLC has dropped. I have not had a chance to touch it. Do you guys play Elden Ring or From Software games at all?
No. Nope.
Okay, so I mean, they're notoriously difficult. I'm sure you're aware, and they often come up in the games accessibility conversation because difficulty is subjective. So when developers are like, "We refuse to drop the difficulty," that, you know, usually creates something. And again, From Software is often a part of that conversation. But there was a recent interview, and I thought what was really interesting in it. So he Miyazaki, not that Miyazaki, other Miyazaki, the From Software Miyazaki. Basically said that they can't really turn down the difficulty in Elden Ring because it breaks the game, which it is, at first I was like, well, that's interesting because difficulty is subjective, but then it does have like leveling and armor that you can only use at a certain level, and it also has PvP, and so I maybe that's the part where it's like that system gets complicated to account for scaling and to like alter people's damage outputs because they raided somebody who's on a lower difficult, like that maybe is where they're coming from. But the really interesting thing is that in that same interview he basically said, like, honestly, I'm not against it, we're looking into how to implement like a difficulty modification. So I thought that that felt significant, that he's like so the exact thing he said was, he said, this is not something I'm opposed to in the slightest. We're going to continue to look into it and see how we can do those things, do those features in our future titles. So it sounds like From Software is, you know, very aware of like, yes, our reputation is for being difficult, but difficulty is subjective and we want to make it so that other people can, you know, play it at their difficulty where they are still, you know, having a tough time, but not, you know, insane time because the quote unquote standard difficulty is too high. But yeah, I think that felt like a pretty, to me, it feels like a good moment for the accessibility movement in gaming to have that acknowledgement.
That's awesome.
I mean, yes. I mean, like, for him to say that is a nice thing. The question then becomes, is that like the, you know, the classic, hey, have you considered this? Oh, yes, we're considering it. We're always looking into all of our options. Kind of like, you know, the answer you give when you don't want to say no. So it's, oh, it's always on the table, whether or not we ever actually do it.
And you actually do it. Yeah.
Like, actions that is the thing.
Far larger than words. That sort of reminds me, actually. Sorry. Like, now that I'm thinking about
it.
To tell you to like movies and TV immediately, but I remember. Remember, like, interviews with Kathleen Kennedy several years back of Star Wars, and maybe, like, 6-7 years ago, where journalists would ask her, oh, when's there going to be a woman director of a Star Wars film or a TV series, etc.? And she'll always say, like, it's coming, and... But no, like, you actually have to be about it instead of just hiring a bunch of white men.
Yeah.
But thankfully, like, Star Wars is at that point now. It, like, look behind the scenes, you see it's, like, really diverse. For example, The Acolyte, it has Black writers, East Asian writers, and even a Turkish writer. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the first Swana writer I've seen in Star Wars since the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, with the Iranian-British writer who unfortunately got fired.
Yeah.
But, like, still on this one... Like, it's just actually doing the work. So, like, for disability access, you know, it has to be the same thing. It can't just be, like,
definitely
giving lip service and, like, we just have to.
Yeah. I know. I agree. I think the reason that, for me, it doesn't read as lip service is knowing that
totally,
knowing how different each From Software game has been as it comes out. where like there are things that like once they put it in a game, it's like, why has this not always been an option? Like, mm-hmm. why has this not always been how the menus are structured? Like, this is so much more usable and user friendly. And so knowing that they are constantly improving on their games and not just regurgitating the same systems with different skins on them, I feel like I trust that they actually are trying to figure it out of like, how can we make that a thing? Mm-hmm. But again, I agree. It's like, I don't want to say I'll believe it when I see it because I believe it currently, but like I will be satisfied when I see it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
No, absolutely. And I don't mean to imply that I think that he's not, that he's just doing that. But
oh,
just
no, but I think,
that.
I think the caution is right.
The answer that you get from every head of something. Have you considered this? Oh, of course. We're always looking into our options. Yeah, yeah. We all look into all options.
Yeah. Like it's still a good question to ask. I think like that lets them feel the pressure to do better. You know, and eventually they do, you know, hopefully most
cases.
That's
true. Yeah. If no one's asking the question, like if interviewers aren't like, hey, so are you ever going to make this so that people like can play it, so that other people can play it who are currently excluded because of XYZ factor? Mm-hmm. Like if they don't hear that question, they might not be considering it. So I think that's definitely important. And I think it's also good because we have other game developers who have like heard that question and put in the work and done it. And so there's now they can't even say like, well, we don't know how that would work or we don't know what those systems would look like because those systems exist. Like there are, you know, like, cause I was reading one person commenting on it and saying like something that would help them with their disabilities to play it is if there was like more indicators of kind of like who you're targeting or where the enemies are, like basic things like that, where it's like, if you have like poor eyesight and it's a very like, you know, busy screen and it's hard to tell like what's an enemy, what's an object, all that, like, you know, even something as simple as that of like enemy highlighting, it's like that would be huge for that person. And there are games that have things like enemy highlighting that you can turn on as an accessibility feature. So I'm hopeful that the next game will have more of those options and that it's just another step forward towards people being able to enjoy these ridiculous games and all games, honestly.
Yeah.
All right. So that does it for the news. Moving on to the main show. I had this idea after I didn't miss out, but I came, I would say, pretty late to something. I just finished Fallout less than a week ago, I think. And no one is really talking about it anymore. Like I have missed out on the cultural moment and the social aspect of watching Fallout. But also I kind of just didn't care because like I watched the show and I enjoyed it. And after I had that experience, I was like, I want to talk about the joy of missing out, which I don't think is a revolutionary idea. But I do think that it might be, for myself included, it might be kind of refreshing to discuss and, you know, like figure out how to put into practice this idea of like intentionally missing out. So I wanted to start by asking you guys, what have you missed out on lately?
For me, well, let's see. I haven't watched a Star Wars since The Rise of Skywalker.
Movie or show? Well, I guess there's period. Have there been movies since Rise of Skywalker now?
I think there's only TV shows since then.
Okay.
But I haven't seen any of those. I caught some of the Marvel movies since Endgame, but none of the TV shows. I haven't owned a PlayStation since PS3. I'm kind of, you know, hitting all the...
Ooh, that's a big missing out of, like, I cut myself out of an ecosystem.
Yeah, I have three different games. I have three different ways, well, four really with mobile to play games. And I'm still in that minority camp. Well, I used to be in the minority camp of if I have to choose between God of War and Last of Us or Halo and Gears, I still want Halo and Gears. And now, since, you know, Microsoft's bought half of the ecosystem, like I want Outer Worlds, so that's a plus now, and everything else. So of course we'll see whether or not anything they make ends up being exclusive, but yeah, so I mean, like, there's all kinds of stuff. I've always been a big believer of I have finite money and energy, so I do what I want and not what everyone's saying I should be doing.
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't even think I have been thinking about this whole conversation from the point of like I have finite time, but the I have finite money and finite energy is also a very big part of this. Sora, what have you been missing out on?
It's not necessarily like that I'm choosing to miss out on something. Rather, I'm just like being very selective with what I'm going for. And being very deliberate in my choices and not simply going with the crowd. I suppose the maybe also Star Wars related, biggest things I've JOMO'd out, Joy I've missed out on, have been Ahsoka and The Mandalorian. Now, The Mandalorian, I watched season one, which I enjoyed. I watched some episodes of season two, like first one to three or something.
Yeah.
And I stopped watching. I wasn't enjoying the season. And particularly, I will say, now there was a lot of discourse about this particular episode, in which there was this reptilian alien mom that came onto the Mandalorian ship.
Oh, yep.
And definitely, perhaps, reactions to the plot line in which Baby Yoda eats her eggs, which I interpreted as like, oh, these are her actual children. But, some say those were just like her eggs that haven't been fertilized yet. I know, it's weird. It's weird.
But they never specify.
They didn't specify. And the thing is, like, just for myself, like taking like online reactions out of it, just being for myself, I made a decision in that moment. You know what? I am not enjoying the show anymore. And that coupled with Gina Carano, like the writing of The Mandalorian coupled with Gina Carano, who like increasingly made such a lot of transphobic rants and is just like a terrible person. And in the end, like she equated being a right winger to being a Jewish person during the Holocaust. That was what finally got Star Wars and Disney to not even fire her. They just didn't renew her contract for season three. In effect, it could be seen as a firing, but yeah. So anyway, I was just like, I don't want to be part of this. I don't want to be watching The Mandalorian. And, once Gina Carano effectively got fired, I tried watching season three, but I was like, you know what? Nope, this still isn't for me. I actually got screeners for The Mandalorian season three. And I just like, I might as well watch them. I'm not watching on Disney Plus.
Yeah, so try it out.
Yeah, try it out. And I was like, yep, not for me. Then that's okay. Like not every Star Wars has to be for you. And and with Ahsoka, the main reason, besides especially at the time, some of Rosario Dawson's controversies, the reason I didn't watch that is because I hate the casting they did for Sabine. It is a totally colorist casting, like this much like Sabine, who is voiced by a South Asian actress, Tia Sirkar, on Rebels, and had, if not like dark skin, still like pretty brown skin. Like, a lot of us brown people could see our like browner like skin toned, like people could see ourselves in her, was cast with a very light skinned half East Asian, half Italian actress. And I'm just like, no, I don't want to support this. I don't want to support this media with this very colorist casting. And I even read reviews and the show didn't even seem that good. So I had joy of missing out on that. So yeah, I guess I am more selective with my media. And what I will also say, sorry to keep talking about Star Wars as this example.
No, you're good. One of the questions I was going to ask was why did you choose to miss out? And you answered that of there's all of these real world things that are going on, and also just stories not resonating with you.
Yeah, exactly. Now, something like The Acolyte is really resonating with me. And then I see and hear about the reactions to this show from effectively Phantom Menace type people. And it's like, I'm thinking, the actual way to make the show not a success is to not talk about it. Talking about and even if it's with the really ignorant grievances, often racist and sexist, but also sometimes just plain nonsensical, where they're saying this show is breaking canon, where I'm like, where? You're not actually giving a legitimate critique of this series. And I'm just like, why don't you actually engage in JOMO? Why don't you actually just not watch the show?
Yeah.
Why don't you actually just you're giving it, effectively, they're giving it free airtime in a lot of ways. So I'm just like, we need to get to a point where if you genuinely don't like something, don't watch it. Don't talk about it.
Enjoy your time elsewhere. Yeah. Enjoy your time elsewhere. Not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think that that's, yeah, like the opposite of the joy of missing out. Well, not the direct opposite, but an opposite is hate watching.
Yes.
Where you're like, I'm not going to walk away from this. I'm just going to, I'm going to watch it to talk about how bad it is. And sometimes that's fun. And sometimes it's just like an incredibly toxic behavior. Like I've watched things that are bad because I know they're bad and because I'm going to have fun with it. But watching something bad for the sake of watching something bad and getting yourself riled up is kind of pointless. And we'll get into that later, because there's a whole, like, the why you miss out thing is like its whole huge thing. But I totally get what you're saying about Star Wars being like kind of all over the place for you. And then for Charles, like, to watch, you know, Rise of Skywalker and be like, I'm out, I'm good.
Well,
like,
it wasn't like a conscious, like, I watched it and like, yeah, that movie has all kinds of issues. I'm not going to defend that movie. But at the same time, like, I feel like the biggest thing for me is like, I have like, and I don't know if this is something that's uniquely me or not, but like, even though I do not, in like, my Twitter feed is very curated, I do not just have all kinds of stuff showing up. I hear about discourses, but I don't see them. And even just like watching, like, Adrian Same. Has been very active talking about The Acolyte and stuff, and just seeing all of the, hearing about the takes that are going on around it and constantly go around about everything Star Wars. Either it's the greatest thing ever, it's trash, it's like, I just get exhausted. I'm like, I don't want that. I just am not. It's just not what I'm.
Yeah.
People in general just can't be, quote unquote, normal about this franchise. It has to go to such extremes.
I mean,
either way. When what I really hope for Star Wars, and I actually am hopeful it is becoming that, where this can be a more segmented series. You can have a series here. You can have a movie here. They don't have to be connected. It's like the opposite of the MCU or other like big universes, and like
a really refreshing just like let way. The movies exist,
let them exist. And like, specifically because Star Wars has had this problem, especially with something like The Mandalorian or Boba Fett or whatever, just they don't have to connect to the Skywalkers. They don't have to connect to the Skywalker saga. Specifically, I mean, I will admit The Acolyte, you know, in some esoteric ways does, but it's like, it feels like its own thing. Just let things be their own.
Yes.
And if someone enjoys it or not, that's it. You know, like they can just enjoy it or not watch it.
It's basically, they can exist in a shared universe in the way that, while the MCU doesn't do this, actual comic books exist. Where you can be an Avengers fan, read Avengers comics, never pick up an X-Men comic, and maybe once every 5 years when they have a crossover event, you see the characters. Otherwise, they don't exist. They're just there.
On that note, I'm having this realization that I think the places where I see people engaging in and talking about missing out the most are Marvel and Star Wars. Whoa. And I want to make sure that we don't spend the whole conversation there, but it's interesting that these two massive franchises owned by the same company, those are the places that I see people the most often being like, yeah, I didn't watch that one. Whoa. And I'm fine that I didn't watch that one.
Well, I can tell you some DC stories, though, I say as I'm wearing my Superman t-shirt.
Well, I mean, and I feel like a lot of that also comes from the fact that there's just so much of it. I mean, it's very much, I mean, kind of like for me,
the pivot to TV shows over movies. Yeah. That like,
that becomes a thing. I mean, I feel like with Marvel, even to an extent with just movies, but I mean, like, I feel like it's kind of similar for me. Like, part of the reason why I've never felt a super huge call to grab a PlayStation is because, you know, like, PlayStation, its big claim to fame is those huge single-player, third-person narrative action-adventure games. Mm-hmm. And they, from everything I've heard, they make them great. I used to enjoy them when I had my PS3. But I can get that from other people. I don't need, and it is a genre. Like, it's one of the oldest genres at this point in gaming. I've done those sorts of games a ton of times. And so, like, I don't feel compelled to dive for even more of it. And then the other thing that I meant to bring up a little earlier, and again, I don't know if this is just a me thing, but when something comes along that I'm not instantly all about, the more I hear about it, the less I become likely to play it. Like, I've never played Last of Us, and it seems like a really good concept and premise, but it didn't speak to me. I didn't need to go out and buy a PlayStation to play it. And at this point, like, I'm so sick of hearing about how The Last of Us is the greatest thing of all time, and everyone who's a gamer has played it and adores it and loves it, and I'm like, I've never touched it. Like, you know.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that gets into the hype conversation, because for like, so for me, examples, this is not a super recent one, but something that I missed out on, I didn't watch Ted Lasso. Sure. And I've been told that I'm wrong for not watching Ted Lasso, and I've been told that I need to watch Ted Lasso, and I'm sure it's good. One thing is, it's not going to live up to the hype, because too many of people have told me that it's going to change my life to watch it.
I will admit that season 3 doesn't live up to the hype.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Like, and I'm a contrarian saying that, because like, many people love the series like wholesale. I enjoy the series a lot, but I'm also not going to pretend it's like the best thing ever. But I
totally. And I mean, it's
Oh,
I was just gonna say, it's just a show that, like, I mean, like Charles was saying with Last of Us, it's like I heard good things about it. It seemed like it might be for me, but I wasn't immediately on board. And then I didn't watch it right away, and then the hype just kept building, and I was, by the time that I felt like I might watch it, I just didn't want to, because it was like, the only thing that's going to happen is the show's going to disappoint me, and I'm going to disappoint everyone who told me to watch it. And that's not fun.
So speaking of that, I have, you might say, the king or queen of examples when it comes to that. So
I'm locking in my guess in my head, but what is it?
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, so, I got it right.
So, yeah. So I was in college. Yeah. I believe it was my freshman or sophomore year. And, you know, I had heard of Game of Thrones, you know, but I was also a busy college student. You know, I was making time mainly to watch Legend of Korra, which was coming out. And, you know, like I still have, as in my whole life, been into sci-fi and fantasy. You know, I had seen trailers for Game of Thrones, and I thought at the time, oh, I'm not sure this is for me.
Yeah.
And I distinctly remember some of my classmates, when I told them that I hadn't watched Game of Thrones, they got mad at me. And I was so bewildered. Yes. I just like, I mean, it wasn't simply like they said, oh, like, oh, you need to watch it. You have to watch it. Like, they were angry. And
yeah, people got very attached to that show. And yeah. This brings up something that I was thinking about that I didn't have time to put it into the show somewhere. But missing out itself is momentary.
Yes.
Because like, whether or not you watched Game of Thrones and how people felt about you watching Game of Thrones, it changed every single season, and then it ended the way that it ended.
Well, yeah.
And suddenly it wasn't even a question. Like, no one was asking, did you watch Game of Thrones? Well, it just disappeared.
Well, this is the thing for me. Like, I finally watched it right before season 3 came out. I said, fine, let me just check. Like, I was worn down. I was like, I guess I'll watch it. And I was kind of bitter while watching it. I felt like this was a chore I had to watch. So I don't think, I mean, I still liked it, but I didn't enjoy it to the extent.
But you were like,
I'm
going to prove one of us right. Like, either I'm right for missing it, or you're right for telling me to watch it.
But then I watched season 3, and my queen, Daenerys Targaryen Stormborn, I became obsessed with her and like her journey. Mm-hmm. And like, I was all in it for her. And then the last season happened. And you know, like, and at that time, like, I felt like all those years ago, I thought I should have gone with my initial instinct. I should never have gone and invested. And even with House of the Dragon, like, we've watched like most of the first season, but it's extremely intense and violent.
Yep.
And you know, for me and my fiance,
the first episode of season 2 is going to hit hard if you haven't watched it
yet. Yeah. And I, as I've heard, but I'm also like, my fiance and I, we've discussed this together, and we're also like, do we want to subject ourselves to it? This very stressful viewing experience. It's not enjoyable, and that's okay. And like, I don't need to be part of the discourse of this, like, monoculture. This goes into another thing.
Yeah.
the monoculture itself is dying. I think we see that like around us, like the MCU,
totally.
Star Wars, maybe.
Yep. I mean, Jason talked about that a lot in our celebrities episode of like the idea of like there being one thing is kind of going away.
Mm-hmm. There's less pressure to like, you know, the thing is like there will still be these big successes. Like, for example, Fallout.
Yes.
But I've not watched Fallout yet, and I'm sure many people haven't either, even while it's still very successful. I think that there needs to be room and understanding that people can get into things a little late, and that's okay, because people are busy. That does not mean... Like, this is another thing. I think that because we've so often lived in the monoculture, people feel like we have to tell people watch this movie or TV show because we want it to be the monoculture.
How we've always done it.
When, no, these shows and movies, they'll still be successful. Instead, what you should be doing is getting like, you know, I'm pointing to my Polite Society poster in the background, get like people to support indie cinema or TV shows or shows that are like more diverse and inclusive and like that aren't from these big companies, you know?
I don't want to be told to watch a popular, successful show with a huge marketing budget by people I know because it's like, well, of course I know to watch that. The company's telling me to watch that. And that gets into a separate thing. But real quick, I did want to hit on, because you were talking about like coming to it late, is I do think that there is also multiple ways of missing out. There's like we've been talking about, of like watching something late and like you just missed out on the discourse, like the capital D discourse. And then there's like never truly never watching it, never starting it. But then there's also, you know, when you start something and you fall off of it and you're just like, this was not for me. And personally, I go for that second one of like just never starting, because when I do watch something to watch it, to check it off of my list, I feel like I'm kind of like reducing the joy that I would get from watching it. Like I'm not getting entertained. I'm just checking off a box. But like of those three, or if there's another way of missing out, like where do you guys kind of find yourselves? Like, what do you tend to just like not start things at all? Or do you usually try to give something a shot or just like go at your own pace?
I mean, I guess more often than not, I just don't check things out. I have the things that interest me. I mean, of course, sometimes I go out of my space just because as a reviewer, I have to, of course. But by and large, like I forget what. Where exactly it came from. I feel like there was a point at some point way back in my history where I just came to the conclusion that I'm going to consume the media I want to consume. I'm not going to do things because, you know, that's why, like, I've always hated every time I hear people talking about something. You know, this kind of goes back to what you guys were just talking about how, you know, whenever you hear someone say everyone is playing XYZ game, and it's like, it drives me nuts. You know, like, you know, Zelda Tears of the Kingdom comes out, it sells like 7 million copies in the first 3 days, and all I can hear about is all anyone did this weekend was play Legend of Zelda. It's like, dude, there's 120 million Switches out there. Not even 10% of the Switch owners are playing Legend of Zelda, let alone quote-unquote everyone. So like,
it's everyone that you know is playing.
Yeah, like everyone in a core group is undoubtedly playing it, and that's great, but like there's
Sorry, Charles, you know what that is? That is the inflation of hype.
Yeah, I mean, it's hyperbole. Yeah, for sure.
When something's having a moment and then it turns into like everyone's doing it, why aren't you doing it?
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't know, because it's just not for me. I'll check it out when I check it out.
It's just not for me. Yeah, exactly. So like I've always been, that's why like I always feel weird, you know, whenever like something brings up, you know, like I see something that's like, hey, you know, rank the top 10 games of all times. I'm like, man, there's like 100 games that people would put on that list I've never played, even though I've played games all my life and I love them, but I just play what I'm interested in. And
because then you get that one guy who's like, so there's this Sega Dreamcast game that was only released in Holland.
You better hope Matt doesn't listen to this.
You're like, if Matt has a Netherlands only Dreamcast game recommendation for me, I will play it. But like it is like people will just have like, here's the console. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, those movies that you watched as a kid because your family had a copy of it and you didn't realize that not everyone has seen this movie. But like there are like those are the games that people will want to put on those like best of all time lists. But I agree, like there's so many games, so many metrics you could be judging by, so many tastes, so many play styles that like I mean, a list like that always feels like it's, you know, just
it's these, basically it's, the most
these are the 10 most popular.
Yeah, yeah, that also have a certain quality, of course.
Because then you get the people who are like, yeah, Tetris is number one. And everyone's like, why would Tetris be number one? It's 40 year, or 50 years old. And it's like, because it's 50 years old and you still know what it is and people still play it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just, it's really interesting to see kind of how that social part of it plays out. Because I think, Swara, going back to your college experience, people like, and going back to what I said earlier, like missing out, like to like feel superior or whatever, like you're, that's not why we do this. Right. But when you do,
we're not trying to be
out,
cool.
People get, people
we're just
get surprised.
Busy.
Exactly. But when you do miss out, people get surprised or like genuinely shocked or offended. And so why, what do you think that's coming from? Like, what's the impetus for that? And like, also what's the benefit or purpose that they're seeing that they're like, why don't you want this? I do wonder if there, I mean, because I think in my head there's two sources of pressure to participate. There's like the corporate pressure, the like the Marvel, the Star Wars, the watch this show, buy this toy, sell these tickets. Like, you know, there's that. And then there's the social pressure, which I think can be good. I think it's like, you know, my friends want to watch something because they want to talk to me about it. Mm-hmm, sure. Sometimes my friends want me to watch something. And literally when I say why, their whole reason is because you will love it. And it's like, that is so nice that you want me to watch this, not to talk about it, not to, for any reason other than you are going to have a good time. That's cool. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder, yeah, like even if those people ultimately like are if sometimes people are misguided in it, is it like, I'm telling you this for community building and to like find common ground and to like grow a deeper bond. And that said, there is a flip side of it where someone has been like, watch this show, tell me when you're done so we can talk about it. And then the only conversation that they have is like, how cool was that? Or how good was that? And I'm like, this is not a deep conversation. I've been misled. Yeah. Like, this is not the conversation I wanted to have with you about it.
For sure. No, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, like when someone wants you to watch something because they think you'll enjoy it, or because, you know, I mean, like I have a friend who's watching The Acolyte, and he was like, Chuck, if you get a chance, I would like you to watch this show just because I want to be able to talk about it rationally with someone who isn't going to be like, it's the greatest thing, it's the worst thing. Yeah. That's definitely a thing. And I also think that, you know, going back for a moment, you know, talking about, you know, why people somehow get so vehement about, you know, people participating in some things, I think a lot of it springs back from like, it's almost like a bit of a modern version of like, when we, at least many of us have known those people who get upset if they meet someone who doesn't care about having a family. Like, their personality is, I have kids, I have the car, I have da-da-da, and this is what I base my personality on. And when you meet someone who has taken Star Wars or something at that same level, where my personality is Star Wars, and now you're saying it's not worth watching? Like, there's that sort of like, you know,
it's
like...
It's so like a personal extreme. Judgment.
It's almost like they have to justify their life choice of investing all this time in Star Wars by convincing you that it's worth it. Because if it's not worth it... Could they be wrong? And a lot of people don't take kindly to that possibility. Like, so,
Charles, you've brought up a good idea for me, and we're going to workshop. Well, maybe workshop this if you have ideas. Is there when someone says like, "Have you watched this?" and when you ask someone, "Have you watched this?" and they say no, is there a way that isn't judgy sounding to say like, "Well, what have you been watching?" Like, not like you have to be watching something at all times, but like, I'm just kind of like, when someone is like, no, I'm not watching Star Wars, I'm like, oh, well, like, what are you, like, how are you feeling your time? Like, I'm, and granted, that comes from like the social pressure side where it's like, I just want to know what you're doing and like what you're checking out because I'm interested and because I know you. But like, I feel like if I were to ask someone, like, well, what are you watching instead? That's just going to come across bad.
I really think that it just comes from a place of empathy and just seeing where they're coming from. For example, you know, I was getting lunch with some of my colleagues the other week, and I asked, you know, we had watched X-Men 97 at the same time, and we talked a lot about that. And I asked them, are you watching The Acolyte? And my colleague friend, he was like, no. And then he got into reasoning of why he's not that into Star Wars. And I'm like, yeah, I see that. You know, like with my own experiences with Star Wars and Star Wars fandom, it's just like, you know, that's the thing. It's like, Oh man, this may sound controversial to say, because I have, like, many friends who are Star Wars fans, and I love y'all, and just like, this isn't you. I'm just like, in general, Star Wars fans, along with other fandoms, as we've observed, can be very obsessive. And
yes,
I'm
talking about Invader Zim.
I mean,
I'm just not sure they could have that nuanced conversation of like hearing where someone is coming from about not liking the thing you love. And I've said this so many times that you are most secure in your love of something if you can, in like movies, TVs, and games, like media entertainment, if you can simply accept that people don't like it, that will criticize it, that can even criticize it to your face. And like, I genuinely think online and in person, if you feel insecure about someone criticizing what you love, then I think that betrays the insecurity you have about them potentially being right about something. Instead, they put up this blindish devotion to this franchise, which is like,
and honestly,
it's not normal, you know?
That sounds like a good conversation to have too. It's, you know, and where if your follow-up question isn't like, well, what have you been watching instead? But it's just like, if you're open to it, I'd love to hear why you don't want to watch it, or like what. And sometimes it's just like, literally, I don't like sci-fi. Literally, I don't like horror. And other times it's like, well, here's why the story doesn't click for me. And it's, you know, something like the fish lady or the frog lady episode of Mandalorian.
Well, or the Rise of Skywalker. You know, the Rise of Skywalker is a perfectly valid reason not to be invested in Star
Wars. To just check out. Yeah. I mean, for me, like I have been missing out on most Marvel shows as of late. I think like for a couple years now.
Same.
And part of it is just, it's straight up time. Mm-hmm. It is that I only have so much time and I only have so much energy. And I also, I mean, and this is going to like a broader thing, I don't know that I trust the vision for the franchise anymore.
Yeah, same.
Like I feel like they got to Endgame and they didn't have a plan. They didn't have a next phase, so to speak.
Like Alex, that's also a JOMO for me, like the MCU in like so many ways. The only like MCU tangential thing I've enjoyed has been X-Men 97, which isn't really MCU. It's like Marvel animation. I'm like, thank God, please just keep this separate from the MCU. I didn't watch Secret Invasion. Initially, you know, I didn't watch it because of the AI opening credits, and the show ended up being one of the worst things Marvel has ever done. I didn't watch Loki season 2, even though I enjoyed season 1. I might watch season 2. I just hear season 2's not as good. I mean, even though it has a strong ending. I have not watched Echo yet. I've heard mixed things about it. You know, like I don't trust, like, you know, the output from live action Marvel Studios anymore, and that's okay, and that is my right to like say I'm going to miss out on this, I'm not going to be involved in discourse,
totally.
I'm not going to like subject myself to it. And you know what, there's a good chance I won't watch Deadpool versus Wolverine because, you know, I don't care for the director.
I check that one out. I might come back for that one just because it might be fun, but I see where you're coming from.
To get a little bit back to your question about, you know, like how you ask about that, I feel like, and obviously, I mean, like this is a purely in person or perhaps over the phone if anyone actually talks over the phone anymore, but like for me, that question comes down to tone. You know, if you ask me, so what are you watching? That's fine. If you say, oh, so what are you watching? Like, those are two entirely
like,
different
questions.
There's
nothing else.
You know,
what
are you doing? It's like, I'm reading, I'm painting,
totally.
I'm watching anime.
Yeah, they're like, one of those is a totally reasonable,
like,
cool, you know, catching up with your neighbor. Yeah. The other is very Stepford and very like, you are out of line for not watching this.
The other one has a judgmental tone that, like, you know, and obviously, you know, like, you, anyone can tell when they hear it which one is okay to use and which one you're being a dick.
Totally,
for sure. So I mean, I think that's a whole, that's a, that would be the easiest way for me to answer that question.
Okay, no, I appreciate that. I just was like, oh, I actually should start, when people say that they're not watching a thing that I liked, I should have more questions than, are you watching the thing that I like?
Yeah, I mean, or just follow up with, oh, well, then what have you been doing? Like, what are you into lately?
It.
You know, just something that, like, make it so that's not just like inquiring to knowledge, but, oh, well, I want to know what you are doing. you know.
Yeah, because again, this is the community side of it, and like the that part. Now, I do want to also like kind of interrogate the missing, because we've talked a lot about like our reasons for rejecting a piece of media and not watching it, but like, what are the broader benefits of missing out? Like, what's the, like, is it like a mental health thing? Is it just freeing up your time? Like, I mean, I know that we talked about like the MCU stuff, and like for me, it's just been, if with MCU specifically, it feels kind of freeing to be like, I'm out, I'm not watching it anymore. Like, I might catch it if I hear that it's really, really good. But like, it's just kind of like a nice feeling to be like, I have put that to rest and it was really fun while it lasted, and now I'm on to other things. But like, what are the actual benefits of missing out? Because I mean, the benefits of participating are that, you know, community, those, you know, assuming that you have good, healthy community to participate in with those things. But like, yeah, so what's the benefit of being like, I'm not doing this?
You see, that's the key thing, Alex. Healthy communities to deal with and talk about a lot of these things, they can be hard to come by. That's why I love Discord so much. Discord, where you have these private communities, you can like talk about your thoughts about an episode or two. Often, like, you know, with like-minded people, you find your tribe.
Yeah. I mean, and it doesn't even have to be like an echo chamber. It's just like people who are willing to be critical of a thing on the same level.
But the overall benefits, yeah, I would say, you know, you mentioned a couple of them earlier, you know, freeing up your mental space, like not engaging the discourse, being able to focus on things you actually love and enjoy. Yeah, that's very much a thing. And just like, there would be times like I would stress out over, you know, a show I was watching. It would become too invested, honestly. And I'm going to point to another example on the DC side. You know, I was basically an Arrowverse correspondent for years, you know, doing interviews and stuff with Nerds of Color and like on a podcast or two. But, you know, after I had watched Arrow from the beginning, then season 4 happened.
Was that the season where it got like really ridiculous?
It got really ridiculous. They killed off Black Canary. I know people don't like Laurel for valid reasons, but you know, I was invested in her character and was hoping to see her grow, and they just killed her off.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like her actress though, Katie Cassidy, for a number of reasons. Yeah, but after season 4 of Arrow, I was just like, I'm through with this. I am not going to subject myself and get invested or stressed out like if this is how the show is going to treat its characters. I was just like, I'm out. And mm-hmm. I will say, like, this may sound a little extreme, but it felt like I was breaking off some sort of relationship. Like, I felt like I was breaking up with this show, which turned out to be like for the best. But like, you know, I mean, that's like probably hyperbolic, but you do like get invested in these parasocial relationships with these characters, and you want to see where
you're also
go.
Investing time regularly into it. And now you're like, I have an hour a week back.
Yeah.
Or if it's like, you know, a show that's been around for a while and you're like, mm-hmm. I am no longer going to keep watching the next Star Trek Next Generation. And you're only on season 2, and it's like, well, you just got 11. Is it 11 seasons of time back or whatever? Is 7? Like, you just got back all this time that you didn't have. So I totally get that, like, feeling like now that investment is off the table, that it is kind of like a breakup and kind of like resetting your resources.
And I also want to go back to just the fact that we don't have to like be watching and subjecting ourselves to things we don't like. We don't have to, unless like you're paid for it.
Yeah.
Unless like
anyone that says that you have to, that's capitalism talking.
Yes.
And capitalism is always the villain on this show.
Here we go. There we go. Yeah, Scooby-Doo.
Charles,
reveal.
Did you have a thought on this?
Yeah.
Yes, it's the Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I think also another important thing that I don't hear people mention very often in observations about this sort of stuff is the fact that, like, media can... this is going to sound like a funny comparison initially, but I'll get there. It's kind of like food. You ever have that food that you eat in such a huge quantity one day? You have like a huge bowl of something. It's the greatest mm-hmm. thing. You make yourself nauseous. Then for the rest of your life, you see it and you're like, no, I can't
do
that.
I made a mistake.
I can't do that.
My sister threw up gummy bears once and couldn't eat them for like 6 years.
Yeah, like it can have that way. I mean, like I feel like that's part of the big reason why I remember when the 360 PS3 era of video games came along and every game was open world. And I loved it. It's like, oh, we have these huge open world games you can run around. And then eventually it got to the point where it's just like, this just means I spend more time running from place to place. And to this day now, whenever somebody says big open world, it's not an exciting thing for me. It's like, okay.
Yeah, is it open world or is it spread out? Because like, those are two different things.
It's like, what else have you got? Like, I've done it. I've done it so many times. I don't care about your open world. What is the narrative? Yeah. What is the game? And like, and I think that that can become a really big thing that like, you know, like even if it isn't a lack of quality, even if it's just, it becomes a thing where you're like, oh my God, if I hear one more time about how someone from our world fell into another fantasy world and has to adapt to it, I'm going to scream. Even though I like the general concept of isekais, but I don't need six of them a season. It's, you can't make it that different.
Just start getting real weird with it, where someone fell out of a fantasy world into like a Fallout world, like into a post-apocalyptic
world where they died and are resurrected in the first season, but now they're a chat, and like it's just like, guys, no, this isn't doing it. I don't need this much of it. And
no, but I did, Charles, in my notes, I ended up deleting it, but you're hitting on a big thing, which is like treating media as a diet,
yeah,
and like conceptualizing what you're taking in as food. So keep going with this because I want to talk about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you're like, I mean, and in that same concept, like we all have our comfort foods, you know, like I've put probably 600 hours of Marvel Snap in over the last year and three quarters at this point. But, you know, I get it. And, you know, that's my staple game. That's the thing I always go back to. But, you know, yeah, I do some puzzle gaming now and then. I do some action game. You know, we've been eating great on the tournament fighter side with like Tekken and Street Fighter. And so like, you know, it is good. Like you have that rotation and stuff, and it's nice to just get different things. Cause there are things that like, I find there are experiences that like I discover and I'm like, oh my gosh, I absolutely love that. Like, oh my God, this is going to be a callback now, but like, I don't know if either one of you played Heavy Rain. Back on the PS3.
No.
It was by the same people who did like Detroit Become Human and those sorts of games. Those like narrative, like everything's basically a QuickTime event almost. There's no fixed control scheme. And I adored that game. Had some problems looking back at it now, but it was so different for the time. Never played a game like it. Oh, a lot like the Telltale games, if you've played any of those.
Okay, yeah.
And it was that style of game. And I loved it. And I have never needed another game like it. Like, every time I've talked to someone, they're like, oh, you like that? You should try this. I'm like, nope, I played it that one time. I'm good. I don't need... Just because I enjoy something once doesn't mean that I need to find more and more of it. You can just have something, and it's great, and then walk away.
And often, with those things, it's like, I will play one game or watch one movie that's in a specific vein, and I'm like, I absolutely loved that. And I will try another one to see if I like more than just that one. And sometimes it's like, nope, that one clicked with me for XYZ reasons and other ones are not going to click. Therefore, even though all of my friends played this game and we all played it at the same time and we all loved it, and now they're all playing game two or watching this new TV show, I'm going to choose to not engage because for me, it's just not, you know, it's not hitting.
Well,
I think that's a really good point.
Well, this is the thing as well, talking about the cookie cutter concept, and Kate has talked about it on the podcast. I remember distinctly in the vein of animation and seeing like Disney animation do effectively a cookie cutter either story or animation style, and you see it with the MCU as well. You see it with games like you were talking about, Charles, and the open world concept, and the lack of novelty, the lack of investment in the artists, like designing these stories and worlds and games, that's, you know, part of the problem of capitalism as well. It's because these CEOs, these executives, they want to make money with a quote unquote proven formulaic success that they can replicate as much as possible, and often overwork their employees. And it's just, it's bad for the consumer, it's bad for the artists, it's bad for, you know, the industries that we're covering. It's only good for these CEOs looking to make the biggest buck possible. I mean, like,
And then it crashes out from under them when inevitably people are like, actually, I'm over it. I don't need more of this.
Yeah.
But you guys, the next six movies that you guys filmed are all this and all of us are done with them.
Like, why the hell does there need to be a Frozen 4? You know, like, I saw that they had announced, like, we're announcing a Frozen 3. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. And then, like, they said, oh, we have Frozen 4 and it works out as well. I'm like, why? Why do we need a Despicable Me 4? Like, I mean, don't some of these kids, I'm sure some of these kids must be getting tired of like the same characters, at least some of them, not all of them. I'm probably,
but no, but I see what you're saying. Yeah, like, it's that everything becomes a series or a franchise or needs to get like duplicated, replicated. Other companies do their version of it.
And audiences eventually lose interest. You know, we're seeing it with the MCU now.
Well, and there's also that thing of, like, are you even able to capture the magic of that? Like, there have been a lot of games that are, you know, kind of following the Grand Theft Auto crime simulator format. But at the end of the day, Grand Theft Auto is the go-to example for that genre. And it's what sells best and what has been... They've been releasing the same game for 10 years. Like, Grand Theft Auto 5 has been getting released over and over again for 10 years. Other games in that style trying to emulate it, like, they're not cracking that audience, or they're not cracking what made people enjoy it. And so now we have this weird thing where it's like, well, it's just kind of the one that's doing well, but like, also, is it, you know, like, do we even know why it did well? Like, and I don't know that we do, because we still haven't quite replicated it.
Well, and oftentimes, I mean, again, also, I mean, like, and with video games, you have the added situation when it comes to, you know, like, whether or not you want to miss out on something when something big's coming out. When you're talking about the scale of games, especially if it's something like GTA, which has the games of service aspect of GTA Online, where it's like, oh, people are talking about this game. It sounds really cool. Maybe I'll get into it. Though I have already invested 600 hours in GTA Online. So is it good enough to abandon all that? I'll just keep playing GTA Online.
Do I want to start over, or do I want to...
No.
And actually, I'll be interested now to see when Grand Theft Auto 6 comes out. Is any of the online stuff going to transfer? Or is it going to be start over?
That is a good question.
Because, the company probably wants people to start over because money.
Yeah.
But I feel like you're right. A lot of players, even if it's within the same franchise, are going to be like, I'm not switching to the new one. I will continue to play the old one that I like and that I have already spent money on.
Absolutely.
But yeah, do you guys have any final thoughts that you want to share on this?
Indulge in what you want, miss what you don't care about or what you don't have time for. If something sounds interesting but you think, you know what, I'm just gonna let it all get out and then I'm gonna binge it over a weekend, you do you. Your life, you get it once, enjoy it how you want.
Pop culture hedonism, and indulge in what you want, how you want.
You don't
no owe, one else can tell you
what
to do.
You owe your time to no company and no artist. It's yours.
Swara, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I echo Charles. I say don't let people bully you into watching or playing something. Take, you know, sincere recommendations. Seek out independent artists. And, you know, spread the gospel about that if you feel inclined to do so. But also don't bully people to, you know, engage in the media you want them to. Like, make it reasonable. Just don't feel obliged, you know, for whatever is coming out. Your time is your own, and if you give in to FOMO, you know, it may not end up the way you expect. So that's
totally
my final message.
I agree with all that. I think really it's like, build community, touch grass, enjoy what you want to enjoy, and that's the lesson that I've learned here. But yeah, I think that does it for this week. So before we go, do you guys have any articles that you want to plug or media that you want to recommend, even though we just talked about not pressuring people?
Well, I mean, if people are looking for something chill and relaxing to enjoy, put up a season review on the site for this anime called Bartender Glass of God, which is very chill. Just, you know, like, these people are trying to get the core storyline is these people are trying to get this bartender to be a bartender at their hotel, but really it just rapidly becomes they're at this bar and people show up and he hears their problems or can, you know, kind of guess their problem and gives them a story, serves them a drink, they feel better. Like, it's just a very chill, nice, good feeling show. So if you feel like it.
And where's that streaming?
Crunchyroll.
Cool. I'm gonna check it out. Swara, you got anything? Is it the Acolyte? If you want to tell us more about that.
Well, I'm not really covering that, even though we will on my podcast, The Middle Geeks.
I need to start it. I haven't started it, but I've heard nothing but good things.
I really enjoy it. But you know what? If you don't want to, that's okay too. I'm not going to get on your case about it. So the thing that I've mainly been covering in the last several weeks has been the amazing Peacock series, which is also on Channel 4 in the UK, Nita Manzoor's We Are Lady Parts Series 2, Season 2 has just come out. It's amazing. I think it's even better than the first. For it, cool. I got to, you know, get screeners. I reviewed the series both for the Nerds of Color and for my podcast, The Middle Geek. So please check that out if you're interested in more of my thoughts on media I love. And I got to interview Nita Manzoor, two of the stars, Sarah Camila Impey and Anjana Vasan. And I got to interview the costume designer, PC Williams. They're all amazing. And just watch We're Lady Parts on Peacock, please. It's from, you know, Nita Manzoor. She also did Polite Society. I just like, she's my favorite indie creator, like, or creator period, honestly, at this point. And I also reviewed for But Why Though, a documentary that just came out on demand services, unlike, you know, Amazon, Apple, Google Video, etc. It is Israelism, which is a documentary about Jewish Americans who have been brought up thinking that Israel is the greatest, going through a journey mm-hmm. of realizing that maybe that's not so much the case and things need to change. And basically, I'm going to quote Palestinian influencer and content creator Janan Matari on this, that if you are not Palestinian, you absolutely need to watch this movie. It's very, very good. I have my review on But Why, right, though, for it.
Cool. Thank you guys very much for those recommendations. I think I'm looking at my movie shelf, and I'm going back to your point about promoting like indie things and like smaller things. Movie that I'm seeing that I feel like not a lot of people I know saw is Blind Spotting, which is basically a man out on probation reevaluating his relationship with his best friend, who's like kind of a volatile person. But it's a very good drama starring David Diggs and Rafael Casal, who also wrote it.
Oh yeah, I watched it a few years ago. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it came out in 2018, but I just don't know that many people that saw it. So yeah, go watch Blind Spotting. That's my recommendation. Now, for those of you listening at home, if you liked what you heard here, and if you want more, you are in luck, because we are basically all over the internet. Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Twitch. We have a Discord. All those places, like, subscribe, comment, retweet, all that stuff. We would love to see you there. We would love to talk to you there. And we also have a Patreon. So if you want to throw us a little bit of money to keep the site going, keep the podcast going, that would be greatly appreciated. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at Most Always Alex. Charles, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Gatsu083.
All right. And Swara?
Y'all can find me anywhere online at Spider Swars. I already mentioned my podcast, The Middle Geeks, and check out my work at But Why Though, Nerds of Color, The New Arab, and elsewhere.
All right, cool. Thank you guys so much. And yeah, thank you for joining me for this conversation. I really enjoyed it. And those of you at home, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.